birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. Like always, Abracadamits, I hope you're doing good, taking care of yourself, staying warm. It's cold right now. I guess like it should be, you know. I'm glad to be home. We just got back from a run of shows. Big shout out to these towns. But yeah, we just got back from Huntsville, Alabama at Stand Up Live Comedy Club. Fantastic people in the city of Huntsville. Fantastic people. And I also want to give a big shout out to the staff at Stand Up Live Comedy Club. They treat you like gold. They treat you like royalty. Super, super sweet people. Big shout out to Birmingham, Alabama. We were in the Stardome Comedy Club the following day. And that is a ginormous club. Ginormous club. A lot of legends have played there. So it was super cool to get to play on that stage. I'm talking, you know, that's where Steve Harvey got his start. But yeah, a lot of legends. Dave Chappelle, Louis Anderson. Yeah, it was just really, really cool. Great time in Birmingham. And then we wrapped things up last night in Nashville, Tennessee at Zany's Comedy Club. So always a fun time. Totally enjoyed it, but I am tired. Yes. I am tired, and I'm glad to be home. All right, that being said, let's give a shout-out to the sponsors for the Abracadam Podcast. This episode is also brought to you by Will's Towing, located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, guys, no one likes to be broke down on the side of the road. It's awful. It sucks. But don't panic. If this does ever happen, give Will Roberts a call at 865-272-5300 and let Will Roberts take care of your towing needs. Will will come pick it up, and he will park that car anywhere you need him to park it. If you want that car set in your living room, Will will put it in your living room. Also, we've all seen those tow truck drivers that show up, and they look kind of sketch. You know, like they may have been touching a possum before they came up to you. You know what I mean? One of those guys. You never have to worry about that at Will's Towing. Everybody who works at Will's Towing is clean, safe, and very friendly to deal with. So if your car breaks down, you need a towing service at all, give Will Roberts a call at Will's Towing. That's 865-272-5300. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest, he's a very interesting guy, was fantastic to talk with, very knowledgeable. But he is a conflict resolution coach for Asian Americans. Now, you're probably wondering, what in the world is that? Well, that's why you need to listen to this episode. But it's very enlightening, very educating. Kind of gives you a chance to look at things from someone else's point of view, especially here in the past couple years. We did have the, you know, rise of Asian violence in America. So definitely a cool thing. And also, he's a pharmacist. Yes, which is pretty cool. So he's a drug dealer, a legal drug dealer. And he knows his, you know, so he knows his stuff. And we talk about the vaccine a little bit. So if you're Asian, perfect. You definitely want to listen to this episode because you will gain something out of this. And if you're not Asian, you'll still gain something out of this episode. So if you will, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with pharmacist / conflict resolution coach, Jerry Fu. All right, I'm excited. We got Jerry Fu today on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Jerry?
Hi, Danny. I'm doing great.
I tell you what, man, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam Podcast. But if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Certainly. Yeah, I am a pharmacist for the past 16 or 17 years, but I started my leadership coaching business in October 2020 in the middle of the pandemic with a focus on conflict resolution and with a heart for Asian American leaders.
Okay. Now, first of all, that's awesome. I'm glad you're doing that. Anytime, you know, there's something out there that you can do to help people, that's awesome. But you said during the pandemic. Now, you being Asian, so of course that's, you know, helpful.
Was it some of the conflict and the violence that was kind of going on during the pandemic that may have motivated you to do that?
I mean, that's part of it. The bigger thing is just that it was more of a personal struggle for a long time. And I just didn't want to admit that it was something that would ultimately become something fascinating for me. And I realized, you know what, if I've struggled with this, I'm certainly not alone. And so, you know, I'd love to turn around and help other Asian Americans who I'm sure are struggling with the same thing. And it just so happened that in the middle of the pandemic, the need for effective conflict resolution was all the more amplified by, you know, disparaging remarks and hate crimes and things like that. So to be able to give other Asian American leaders or any Asian American really a voice to say, hey, you know what, I'm not happy about this. I'm going to speak up and I'm not going to lower myself to some of the degradation that, you know, I'm not going to lower myself to the level of the insults that are being hurled at me.
You know what? This is so interesting too. And I don't think people realize this, but, you know, my wife being Asian, I'm around Asian people a lot. Mm-hmm. And one thing that people don't realize is you talked about how you had to you had to be honest with yourself. It seems like a lot of Asian people, especially Asian men, have that show no weakness almost more than any. If you look at all the races, it's like the Asian people are like, you know, I'm not showing you what's really going on in here, brother. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's awesome that, you know, you got somebody that they could, you know, communicate with and see, for example. I think that's a great message that you're doing, man.
Thanks. Yeah. It took a while.
You had to get over your own Asian. I'm not crying. You're crying, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You're just like, if I admit to people that I'm struggling with something, oh no, they might, you know, lose respect for me when
you lose an Asian card, Jerry.
Pretty much. Yeah. I get a lot of questions whether or not I'm even truly Asian because my Mandarin isn't good enough. So yeah.
And I mean, you know, like I said, I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. And let me also say this, you know, I make it a point, and I haven't always been like this, but I try to make it a point to know people different from myself, just Excellent. So I can experience or so I can learn about them and know about other perspectives. It doesn't always change your perspective. It helps you build a better view, though. Put it that way. Now, during the pandemic, one of the biggest issues that I had with, and I'm not even going to get political here, but this is a very, it is what it is. When President Trump was in office and he was speaking about the origin of the virus, which very well, let's be honest, it's not irrational to think of the possibility that it was a lab leak. Okay, that's not an irrational thought. No, not at all. It's still a very strong possibility. Mm-hmm. But the way he was saying it was the problem. And he doesn't realize by calling it the China virus, intentionally to sound like a smartass, that you have these ignorant idiots out here who are going to take that and direct that violence towards Asian Americans, which we saw happen. Absolutely saw happen. Did you notice any kind of uncomfortableness, racism, anything come up during that time?
So, you know, personally for me, thankfully, I didn't experience any violence or disparaging remarks. I'm very fortunate, believe me, you know, it could happen to anybody, you know. And at the same time, you know, there are greater forces of discrimination that just because people aren't being directly hurt does not make it okay. For instance, you know, in Houston, you know, I tell people, did you know that Chinatown was built on discrimination? And they say, what do you mean by that? I said, well, at one point, all the city officials felt that the Asians were a threat. So they sequestered them in the southwest part of the city. And to further add insult to injury, they redrew the voting district in such a way where they couldn't even concentrate all their population into a vote. And so, you know, did anyone get hurt? Technically, no. Is this okay? Absolutely not. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's all sorts of forces, whether quiet or loud, that, you know, there's a fear, right, of like either xenophobia or otherwise, that says, you know, on one hand, yeah, China has made very clear they want to be the next superpower. They want to be the next US. And that means unseating the US. And at the same time, to project that fear onto thinking that every Asian is looking to undercut, you know, the current like authority structure is a pretty dangerous extrapolation.
And you know, I got to be honest with you, my views on the globalization, if I can speak mm-hmm. this morning, have changed. Now, it has mm-hmm. changed during the past few years. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely nothing against Chinese culture, Chinese people at all. Not at all. Thank God for Chinese people. You know what I mean? Yeah. I have nothing against, you know, even Russian people. You know, some of the greatest, sweetest Russian people in the world.
Yeah.
But there, I think all these governments, including ours, want to be the leaders, want to be the head honchos. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to a point to, you know, well, this is the country you're in. So somewhat you got to be supportive and root for the country that you're in. You know, mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody the other day, Jerry, I had somebody on the podcast and no, I was on a podcast, what it was. Okay. And literally right now, they, and you may see these in Houston, I don't know, man, but you know they're opening up restaurants for dogs.
Oh, I haven't seen those yet, but you know, right, I wouldn't be welcome, right?
All I'm saying though is in America, bro, your dog's got a restaurant where it can go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's how, I mean, so that's like when I'm like, there's things about our country I absolutely love, I support, and I, you know, that we do compared to other places, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I am pro US on a lot of things. I am, right. But also I you too, you know,
yeah, of course.
But there's things also though, I wish we could fix in our own country that, mm-hmm. you know, people, it's like, well, everything's made in China. It is made in China. Mm-hmm. We could make it here if we could figure out a freaking way to do shit cheaper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's now you being a pharmacist, because this is a big topic, bro, and I got to bring this up. And this was a head scratcher for me. And I would love to know your opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
The pharmaceutical connection with China.
Okay.
Don't we get so many of our drugs from China too? Is that accurate?
Well, what I can tell you is that, you know, a lot of, and this ties back to the whole, you know, immigration, tariff, you know, outsourcing debate, right? Because you're right, that applies to pharmaceutical companies as well. And so the US in a way set itself up to fail. And let me preface this very carefully. So the phrase that came to mind when you mentioned saying, you know, with the US and some of the complications around immigration, one of the best observations I heard was from a producer from the show called Warrior, which is based on Bruce Lee's writings. And he said, America is a country founded by immigrants that has a very complicated relationship with immigrants, right? Every immigrant came over here hoping for a better life, which is fine, up until they see other immigrants from, you know, from different countries doing the same thing. And all of a sudden they're like, oh crap, well, you know, they're going to take away from the life that I'm trying to make for myself. So I have to cut out or, you know, block what they're doing, right? And so same thing with this, right? Pharmaceutical companies, right? You know, I know a couple that had plants in India, right? They had to get shut down because of COVID, things like that. So there's complications there. And so it's just funny to me when, you know, America is like, buy domestic, you know, support, you know, local labor. But then these companies are like, my bottom line could be a whole lot better if I outsource to other countries where labor costs are cheaper. And then they're like, well, but you outsource to that. So how can you really trust the quality of these drugs if you're, you know, having them manufactured in China or, you know, India or, you know, other countries? And so it's like, well, what do you really, really want? You know, you tell me to, you know, support domestic business, and then you tell me, well, it's getting too expensive, so now you're telling me I need to go to a country that we don't trust, supposedly, right, to save money. So what's your biggest priority, right? Your bottom line or supporting, you know, local businesses? Because right now, right, apparently local businesses can't afford to lower their costs. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just funny to me where, yeah, these pharmaceutical companies that say, oh, you know, yeah, we have plants in like Canada. It's like, but you can't trust drugs that you import from Canada. But it's like, but they're your plants. Like, what? Just tell me that the bottom line is the problem. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep drugs that you yourself need to make. And it's like, well, we didn't. The FDA like signed off on this batch that you're using domestically, and that's okay. But even though like the same drugs are being made in the same factory that are going to two different countries, well, you can trust this batch, but you can't trust the batch that we sent to Canada or Egypt or other countries. Like, just tell me, just tell me it's a money problem. Don't think it's a safety problem.
No, it is a money problem and it's a greed problem. And, you know, they could do a lot of things cheaper in this country right now. Which, you know, like one point I always bring up, and this is going more towards the medical, but okay, technology is supposed to make things cheaper and easier is really what it's supposed to do. You know, and you look like in the medical field to where a surgery 30 years ago that may have took five surgeons to do can be done by maybe one surgeon now.
But
the cost is higher. Technology has made it easier for them to do their jobs, but the cost is higher. So, I mean, and this happens in everything, you know, they don't, prices never go down. You know, that's the number one rule. You know? Prices never go down. And it's kind of a bummer whenever we look at stuff like that. And I mean, I'm not 100% against outsourcing, but at the same time, I think we outsource way too much and it's our own fault. It's no one else's to blame. No other, you know, the evil empire across the sea. No, it's our damn fault. Now being a pharmacist though, I'm sure you've had a lot of conversation about with the COVID-19 vaccine, you know, Pfizer and Moderna. Yeah. By the way, I'm Team Moderna, baby. That funky cold Moderna,
That's what I have in my running through my veins is Moderna. So, looks like we're on the same team.
Now I just saw this, by the way, literally right before you got on, I saw this. Another friend I know on Facebook, she's a pharmacist, and she had posted this on Facebook, and she said, "If you threaten me or any of my employees with COVID, that is a misdemeanor." Can you now? When I read that, I was like, my God, somebody came in there and threatened her with COVID. Are you seeing crazy people like that? Well, let's hear some craziness from being a pharmacist right now.
Well, you know, honestly, my day job doesn't involve a lot of walk-in traffic, thankfully. And so I haven't seen that personally. We have different crazy for a different reason, because where I work in Central Houston, we have a lot of random walk-ins of people that will just ask for random stuff. At one point, a French Canadian family came in needing help, you know, with infant suppositories for their daughter who had a cold, and, you know, I don't know enough French to help them. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff I'm dealing with. I mean, at one point we did have people, you know, with a run on COVID tests because when Omicron hit and they're just shaking every tree and kicking every tire. And we, you know, at the time, my bosses had stopped all COVID testing. And then obviously this new wave, we've resumed it. And so, yeah, I mean, you have people, all sorts of people being like, "Hey, do you do COVID testing?" We're like, "Yeah, here you go." And just like, you know, it's $150. And they're like, "What?" Like, you know, "I thought PF Cares carried it." It's just like, well, if it does, you're going to have to fill out your own paperwork. They're like, "No, I don't want to do that." I'm like, "Okay, no, that's fine." You know, this is the terms of the COVID test here. There's other places. If you're willing to wait in line longer so they file the paperwork for you, please, by all means, go. You know, but if you want something quick, you're going to have to, you know, help move things forward on your own time.
You know, this is interesting too, because now over the Christmas holidays, I got the flu and I caught Omicron. Okay.
Ooh, wow.
Caught both. Now we'll be honest with you. The flu was worse, was really awful.
Okay.
And thank God for the Tamiflu, because I started taking that soon and it knocked it in the bud pretty quick. It was about 3 days of hell. But The weird thing about, they said Omicron, most people don't lose their taste of smell. I did.
Yeah.
And it was weird is when I try to explain to people, I said, you know, it's not like a regular cold when you lose your taste and smell. This was some really weird stuff. Jerry, sometimes I could be able to smell stuff and I'd be like, oh man, this spaghetti smells great. Everything's coming back. And then I would, and there's no taste. And I'm like, what kind of crazy shit is that? You know, I can smell, but I can't taste. I can taste, I can't smell. And it gradually came back. But other than that, I will say Omicron was very mild for me. It was mild for my wife, mild for my daughter. I think it helped being vaccinated, me personally. And I'm sure, you know, everybody right now is a Google scientist. They're like, it says here, you know, whatever, you know. But now let's talk about this because this is a rational topic. This is a rational discussion.
Of course.
Right now, you're familiar with where I live at, in Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge, we've got educated people in Tennessee, folks, if you're not familiar.
Nuclear power.
But we're wearing masks. People are wearing masks, and you have some that aren't, and you have some that are. But mostly, I see people wearing masks in public.
Sure.
But let's talk about this because this is where I question this too.
Okay.
We're at a point right now with the vaccine to where the people who are going to get vaccinated are pretty much already vaccinated.
Okay.
And the people who are not, you damn well know they're not going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
So we continue to wear the masks. And I'm like, what are we doing? Am I wearing this to protect you because you're an asshole? I mean, no offense. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Or am I wearing this to protect me? Because is it really going to protect me? Because Omicron is super contagious. Anyway, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, does it seem kind of crazy? Is all? It really is.
Oh, it's totally crazy. I mean, it's like when you have, you know, a lock on your gym locker, right? It's it's like, on one hand, you feel safe. On the other hand, if someone really wanted to cut the lock, they would find a way to cut the lock.
Yeah.
And that's basically what this feels like, right? It's just kind of like, okay, you know, a mask, is it better than nothing? Sure. Is the placebo effect really going to help me in this case? You know, we're just thankful that Omicron's symptoms are milder than you know, previous other versions, right?
Well, isn't that what a virus? Okay. So it looks like COVID. This is the good news to me.
Yeah.
Now keep in mind, I'm not an expert, but this is the good news to me. Is that COVID is now starting to act like a virus, because don't viruses normally mutate to a weaker strand? As far as, I mean, I wouldn't think that a virus's plan would be to sink the ship every time. You know what I mean? I think it would want to hang out long enough to be able to live to see another day. So that's maybe why viruses mutate to be, you know, not as potent as they originally began. So isn't it seem like it's starting to act like the rest of the viruses that we're familiar with?
I'm not going to pose myself as the expert. That's like, I'm not an infectious disease guy. I'm not a microbiology guy. I'm not like, you know, I'm not here to overstep my boundaries. The last thing I need is for Peter Hotez to be like, that pharmacist is he's just shooting nonsense. Just don't listen to him. I mean, on one hand, viruses maybe, the way they mutate is simply for survival, regardless of their potency against their hosts, right? On the other hand, the whole point of resistance is that they do get stronger. So even if their survival, you know, rates are higher because they've obviously need to do so to mutate, if the cost though of higher survival rate means, you know, less damage to their host, sure, you know, I'll take that trade any day, right? You're just like, Omicron, you know, it's around, but it's got more bark than bite, right? You know, hopefully, I certainly need to do more continuing education on the topic, but for right now, right, what are the best practices we want to put in place to not just protect myself, but for the well-being of those around me? And I think that's really the bigger question, because you know, I'll tell you, you know, my own personal situation. I was supposed to fly into Tennessee to, you know, see family. And, you know, we had after talking with them some more, we just said, okay, you know, let's give it a couple months. Let's just postpone the trip because we'd rather wait for the Omicron spike to kind of subside before we try seeing each other. Right. And, you know, I have another pharmacist friend, you know, he's been a friend for a long time, staunch Baptist. And he's like, look, Omicron's not fatal. You can still do what you want, Jerry. And I was just like, well, you know, even if that's true, you know, isn't the better response not to jeopardize like other people with that risk just because of I want what I want, you know? And again, I'm not here to twist anyone's arm. I'm just asking people, you know, much like we talked about earlier with prejudice and other things, just stretch yourself for just a second and say, hey, you know what? You know, what if everyone was willing to sacrifice just a little bit of time or space or routine so that we can all hold each other to a higher standard so that maybe, you know, COVID numbers could go down.
And that's, you know, and that's part of, I do wear masks when I go in the grocery store and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Good.
Like, if I this do, yeah. will keep the numbers down or get this crap over with. But I'm also thinking of this, and I'm a firm believer, and I'm sure you would agree, mm-hmm. COVID ain't going nowhere. COVID is going to be, yeah. It's here.
Yeah.
And there will be new variants. There will be, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering though, because let's talk about, you know, here in America, you know, mm-hmm. The demand is high. So I'm waiting on somebody to, you know, make a lot of money so we can live a better life, an easier Fair life. So if anybody's listening, cure this shit. Okay, man, I'm tired of it, yeah. You know? But it's crazy times we live in, Jerry, dude. Mm-hmm. Me and you are close to the same. I don't know, you're Asian, so I can't tell how old you are. But
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah. You'll take the good stereotypes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Here we go. But anyways, me and you, we have lived through some crap already. And it's BS because we have seen, okay, we have seen natural disasters. Yeah. We have seen crazy terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
And now a damn pandemic, bro. Okay.
Yeah.
Every freaking movie that we've grown up watching has now happened. Mm-hmm. And dude, I'm just waiting on Deep Impact. I'm just waiting on it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's crazy times. It is so nuts. Yeah. But I don't know. I can only imagine being a pharmacist right now. Now, well, let's bring this up real quick because, I mean, like I said, you aren't an infectious disease expert. You're not. But you are familiar with medicine and vaccine, correct?
Enough.
What is the, what do you think, there was a difference with the Pfizer and the Moderna from past vaccines, correct? The way they work, correct?
Yeah, it's a different mechanism, correct. Yeah.
So do you think that that is what spooked some of the people because it was different from, you know, the chickenpox and stuff like that, or?
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, you know, most vaccines, right? What are they trying to target? You know, the bacterial infections, right? And so the way we used to, right, was to kill off bacteria, you know, either we boiled them or whatever, you know, we injected in people and say, okay, here's a dead version of the bacteria like that we're trying to protect against. Okay, your body will react to it and give you some level of protection. And then when that was insufficient, they say, okay, let's weaken this bacteria, right? And then let's go ahead and inject it into you. And then, yeah, some people might still have some symptoms, but because it's a weakened culture, like your body can fight better against it. Now it's more prepared, right? Like you'd rather do a live, it's called attenuated, right? A live attenuated vaccine versus just a dead one, right? This is the difference between the Salk vaccine that we're familiar with and then the Sabin vaccine, which basically almost eradicated polio, right? And so now, right, but how do you vaccinate against a virus which technically isn't alive until it gets into until it's activated when it gets into a host, right? And so when a virus, the way that it works, right, it injects DNA into a cell and then it continues to replicate it and it explodes. And it's more of less like this program that just kind of hijacks the cell, you know, and so instead of replicating normally, right, and now it replicates viruses, and so it continues to spread. So it's not really live until it's attached to a cell, right? It just kind of floats around until it finds a host and then boop. And so because viruses and bacteria, you know, work in different ways, right, we have to find if we're going to make a vaccine for a virus, we have to find a different way of approaching it, right? We can't just kill it off because it wasn't really alive to begin with, right? And we can't weaken it because, again, it wasn't alive to begin with. So, yeah. So if the virus works through, you know, RNA replication, then we have to have a vaccine that kind of protects against the way the virus will replicate itself, right? And so in a way, you may still experience symptoms. That's why they say, hey, you know, the vaccine isn't going to, you know, like block it completely. Like it's just almost in a way, it's just going to contain it, right? But it's still better than nothing, right? And, you know, I have technicians who refuse to touch it because they're like, well, you know, people, you know, some people died and things like that. It's just like, well, you know, would you rather deal with the side effects of the vaccine or the actual COVID virus, you know? And they say, well, and it's like, look, you've made up your mind. Like I can throw all sorts of questions to challenge your thinking, but at the end of the day, you know, I can't twist your arm. I'd rather not fire you for not being vaccinated. That's a whole nother conversation.
But well, that's good. Also, Jerry, that you, cause I mean, I am a vaccine person. I think you should get vaccinated. To me, it's like wearing a seatbelt. I think Absolutely. It's just common sense, but at the same time, there's something I do value people to have another opinion, even though if I think it's dumb, I value having an opinion, and I'm glad you're not firing people because they chose not to get the vaccine.
Yeah.
They can still feed their families, you know, thank goodness. But now let's bring this up because this is something, but this is before the pandemic. Big Pharma. Big Pharma. They make a pill for everything. They want you hooked on all these pills. The real natural ingredient is to go out and eat dandelions to cure your eczema. Yeah. That's got to be frustrating, man, because you went to school for all these freaking years and to know about medicine and pills. And now there was you're Lex Luthor all of a sudden. So what's that about?
Oh, you know, I'll tell people, right? The more time I spend around drugs, the less I hope I ever have to use them. Like, honestly, like it is at best a temporary solution for people's problems and definitely not a permanent one. And I'll give an example. So with medications, right? If my bonus check is tied to my script count, right? Then it is I have a conflict of interest if a patient says, hey, do I really need this drug? Like, you know, do I really need to take ibuprofen for my joint pain? And if I say something like, no, you know, let's try some stretches, let's do some other things first so you don't have to rely on this medication and the potential side effects that could affect you, you know, my company is going to be like, why didn't you sell the drug? How am I supposed to pay your salary if you don't move product, right? You know, it's kind of like to the dentist, you know, who, if you get paid to drill cavities, you're probably going to find more cavities, right? So if I actually got some reimbursement from like the government, because they do this in Ireland. In Ireland, if a pharmacist finds, a drug that isn't necessary for a patient and they basically kind of intervene and stop it, the government still gives them like a euro or like a dollar or something like that, because they said, hey, you know, you spared us money we would have had to spend to reimburse you for dispensing this drug. But in doing so, if you wouldn't get any money if you didn't with the script. So here's still some compensation to show that we thank you for, you know, saving our healthcare system money, right? We're going to pass along some of the savings to you. And now, right, now you have to kind of wonder, you know, some people may say, well, I still get more money if I dispense the medication, but it's nice that my integrity won't cost me my job because I didn't move enough prescriptions today, right? So this is what I'm seeing, right? When we have a healthcare system that, you know, is very reactive, instead of incentivizing, preventive maintenance for our bodies, right? Because prevention means, oh, I don't need to see my doctor anymore. I'm so healthy, right? And we're just like, we want that. And the doctors are just like, no, we need sick people because sick people is how we make money, right? So what do you want, right? Do you want a system that helps people live healthier lives so they never have to see a hospital? Or do you secretly want people, you know, to be sick because that's how the healthcare system makes money, is we need people to be sick?
Well, first of all, I think that is a fantastic idea that you have to help, you know, pharmacists keep their integrity, you know, And also it gets a little rabbit holey. It gets a little conspiracy theory a little bit here, you know, because we are advertised every day, all this unhealthy crap constantly, unhealthy foods are cheaper. It's so easier just to be unhealthy. Yeah. Everybody's depressed, yada, yada, yada. People making money and it's, who knows, but I do like your idea. I think that's a fantastic idea. Why not give an incentive for these people to push other alternatives other than, you know, swallowing a pill direct? Because most of the times, like with a lot of medications, well, I, you know, like with antidepressants, for, you know, if you take so many for so long, you almost sometimes have to up your dose sometimes, correct?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Tolerance happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Tolerance. So, and I mean, which just means you're coming back for more money, you know, more, you know, so it's kind of a, I don't know, but man, I think that's a great idea, what you just said. I mean, that was new to me. I learned something there. So I totally dig that. Let me bring up one more thing here on the pharmaceutical thing. This is interest to me. Now, this is interest to me.
Yeah.
What do you know, or do you know anything about, this would be the future for medication, like nanotechnology, like, we swallow a pill and a little, you know what I'm talking about, a little robot goes and kills the virus or does something. Do you think that will be a possibility in the near future?
I don't know how near the future would be, but it is, it's in the works. I mean, I locally, there's a great professor named James Tour who is you know, is getting attention for his work in nanotechnology. And they're like, yeah, we've built like this tiny little, you know, bulldozer, you know, and we can, you can swallow the pill and then you can direct it to like help like drill through like a blockage in your artery, right? And it's like, oh, now, and then surgeons are just like, no, they're taking away our jobs, right? I can't cut people open anymore. It's like, well, the whole point is you don't have to. Like, yeah, learn to work the small machine to, you know, remove the blockage and it's minimally invasive. And wow, this is amazing. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's
they're
totally
taking our jobs is what
absolutely,
the
yeah.
Are. See,
yeah.
They're trying to make this like, we'll build a wall and stop the nanos from getting in this country is what we need.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just kind of like, yeah, well, this basically it, right? It's like, you know, if this health problem goes away, then I don't get paid because I'm paid to fix these health problems. And I don't want that to happen. There's a story I read in a book where they talked about where there's this guy who was like supposed to be like shooting like beavers that were trying to dam up a river or whatever else like that. And it's just like, hey, like there's a beaver, shoot him. He's just like, you're trying to take my job? Like, you know, like if there's no beavers to shoot, then I'm going to lose my job. And so it's just kind of funny. So it's like, we want this problem to go away, but not really. Because if it goes away, then, you know, I have no paycheck. So it's the paradox of work.
That's so weird, man. That's, I don't know, man, robots. Okay. The nanotechnology I think is super cool, but at the same time, you've seen the evil, you've seen the Black Mirror, you know, I mean, so the nano robots and robots are coming though. Robots are here taking your jobs regardless if you, you know, you know, robots are even in the sex working industry.
Shout out to the
Japanese. Shout out to the Japanese. We're bringing this back to Asians too. Asians, you know what?
Wonderful.
Let's make a brothel, but with sex robots. You can go have a good time. There you go. And I, for one, Jerry, I'm going to get a little personal real quick, but just so you know, I tried to have sex with a robot one time, but I couldn't figure out how to use that Roomba.
Oh, yeah. That's,
It's a-
You got to check the warranty and the manual. Yeah,
there we go. Those things are complicated. Yeah. All right, Jerry. So let's do this, man. I want to get back, though, and talk about your conflict resolution for Asian Americans.
Yeah.
So what would kind of like be the first step that if someone's having a hard time, do you have like a website that they contact or how does that work?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, what I can do is, you know, the options are on several levels, right? It depends on how much help you want, right? You know, the simplest is to check out my website, www.adaptingleaders.com.
And I'll have you plug that again at the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's fine. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, just for our conversation now to answer this question, right? At the website, you can get a free downloadable guide with a framework on how to handle difficult conversations. And so that involves five steps. The first step is to imagine what a successful conversation would sound like. So let's say I take a client situation and she's like, hey, my boss tried to call me off the clock. I ignored the call because I wasn't at work. He blew up at me the next day saying I wasn't, you know, truly committed to the company and things like that. And I'm just like, how do I confront him? So I'm not keeping this anger bottled up in me, but how do I make sure that when I do try to resolve this, that I don't antagonize him further and possibly get fired, right? And so we say, okay, step one, what does success sound like to you, right? And we say, okay, you know, we apologize, we re-evaluate the expectations and clarify them and make sure that, hey, don't just say, oh yeah, you're fine, and then subjectively later say, I don't think you're, you know, committed, right? Give me set criteria. You know, I need to ask him for set criteria to be sure that I am meeting his expectations and that he can't like dance around vague stuff, because that's not good leadership. So that's the first step. Imagine what a successful conversation would sound like. Step two is to find 10 seconds of courage to set this in motion, right? If some people wait until they feel like they're courageous enough and it's like, oh, I need to put on the whole superhero costume, otherwise I don't feel like doing it, you might wait 6 months before you actually do anything. And by then, like, the building's burned down, so there's nothing left to save, right? So 10 seconds to just, hey, boss, you know, pick up the phone. Hey, boss, I've got something on my mind. Can you help me process it, right? You don't have to give lots of details. You just need to set things in motion and then lock the gate behind you so you don't default into comfort, right? Step three, hey, script your critical moves, okay? Don't let thoughts rattle around in your head. Organize them on paper. You know, make sure you mention everything that you think you need to say. Put it in a logical flow. And that way you can kind of index and inventory what you need to address. So it's like, hey, boss, you know, I am sorry if I am not, you know, meeting your expectations. I'd like clarification on them. You know, this is what I want to make sure that we address so that, you know, we have a good relationship, right? And then now that you have an idea what you want to say, now you can anticipate, well, how might my boss push back? Like, you know, what are some things that I know I'm going to have to anticipate that I'm going to have to respond to, right? Step four, rehearse your critical moves. Train in the dojo before you fight on the street, right? Role play with a friend. Check yourself in the mirror. How's my body language? How's my voice tone? Am I confident? Am I calm? Am I intentional, right? And then step five, do it. You've come too far, right? The cost of inaction is worse than trying and failing, right? Because you can't afford to sit resentful at your job any longer. So that's the framework I walk people through. You can schedule a complimentary 30-minute call if you just say, hey, well, you know, this is great, and I'd like your specific, you know, actions, you know, recommendations for my circumstances. Hey, you can do that too. But yeah, that's typically how people can get started with me.
Now, let me ask you, what are some of the discriminations that Asian Americans will face in the workplace?
Some of the more general ones, you know, a lot of Asians think, right, if I work hard enough, people will notice me and then I'll get that promotion. I don't want to be salesy. I don't want to be, you know, like obnoxious and showing how good a worker I am. So I just going to mind my business and do that. And it's like, well, unless you work for an Asian boss that feels the same way and is attentive to these things, your chances of a promotion are probably very small, right? So there are ways for Asians to, you know, demonstrate that they've done well, right, without being overly showy, right? And if they check in with their boss regularly and say, hey, boss, this is what I worked on, this is the results we got, right? Now they're lining up evidence for their boss, and not in a showy way. They're just saying, hey, this is what I got done this week. What do you need me to do? Right. And the boss is going to say, wow, you know, Jerry is, you know, he takes initiative to keep in touch with me. He communicates well, and he's clearly pulling his weight, right? Maybe, you know, and then if I want to, right, I can have the conversation, bring it up gently. Hey, boss, you know, what kind of extra effort, what would you need to see from me to consider me for a promotion? Right. You can, to give someone, you know, who's afraid to ask these things, a gentle way of bringing up the topic. Right. That's one of the discriminations and how to respond against it. Right. Another is just for Asians to, you know, if someone's questions them, that they don't back down, because if they immediately feel like, oh, this question like pierces a hole in my confidence or my presentation, oh no, and I'm overly apologetic, and they don't, sometimes people push you just to see how much you push back, right? And so Asians' deference doesn't work in that situation, because if you defer, they actually lose respect for you. So that's another thing that they may experience, right? So for them to be able to still make their case and learn to spar, you know, a little bit or push back a little to show, hey, no, I'm going to stand my ground because I know what kind of research I've done and I can justify my answers, you know, and if I don't know, oh, well, hey, reframe it as an opportunity to learn and look up and get back to them, say, hey, that's a great question. I don't have an answer right now, but give me, like, you know, after the presentation is over, you know, find me afterwards. I'll take down what you need me to find out. I'll go look at it and then come back and find you. Right. So to kind of use that judo mentality, right? You're just like, let me flip this attack and then kind of flip it back on them. Right. Anyway, so I'm answering like the discriminations or the things, the challenges, and I'm also giving, you know, ways to respond to those. So anyway, well, those are two that come to mind. Yeah.
The, well, thank you, Jerry, for being braggy. sure. No. I mean, that's what I was kind of wanting to get at, like American culture. And except for Asians, now of course I know there's some braggy Asians out there, but most of the time when you think of the Asian guy, you do think of somebody like it's more quiet. My actions are going to speak louder instead of my words, you know, unlike a lot of other people who are, you know, hey, look at me, you know. So and that's just kind of like the traditional Asian culture. I mean, compared to American, you know, the other cultures that are more louder. You think that's kind of like what you're talking about? Like, you know, they go to the workplace, you know, they're like, look, I'm killing it. He's got to notice me. She's got to notice me, but it's not happening. So almost like there's somewhat of a communication barrier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they said it, you know, in a way they set it up themselves because they assume that people will notice them, right? They're just like, oh, you know, I got good grades, I went to a good school, and therefore the world owes me a good job, right? But this is what people think. And when you realize that it doesn't happen, and you're like, the world doesn't owe you success just because you went to the best schools or you got the best resume, you're like, man, what do I do with myself, right? And so, yeah, the world, you know, when I started my business, like, I'm not owed success just because I took a risk, right? Just because I had the courage to ask out a girl doesn't mean she has to say yes. And, you know, that's part of the challenge, right? So how do you respond? Do you just say, oh, nope, too hard, I'm going to stop? Or do you say, no, I got to keep going, man.
You know, okay, this, I got to say this, and you may not agree with me here, Jerry. Okay. Most, okay, I'm going to sing out two groups here, okay? Whitey is talking, so here we go. This is going to be comfortable. two groups. Okay. My Asian brothers and sisters. Well, this isn't two groups. Actually, it's all Asian. I'm also talking about Indian people as well.
Okay.
First of all, we got some badass Asian doctors and in this country, you know, Indian, Chinese, Japanese, they're so good, and they're so disciplined with their academics, and they're just they're badasses. Thank God we got them. Yeah. Okay? But I'm not there. This is pounded, from what I know, at least. This is pounded in their head their entire lives, that they, if they come here, they've got to go to school, go to college, and do a lot of these things, and which is nothing wrong with that. But I think a lot of stuff is changing too. That's not so much the American dream path anymore. You can go to college and then rack up all this debt and still not get that job that you that you think you deserve. I think and we live in an information age too, by the way, which, you know, we all know, and we all know this, but there's an exception of a few occupations out there. But dude, you could sit down and probably learn everything you wanted to learn on the internet than what you're going to learn in a university that's charging you for this degree. College is a business, and their prices have never went down, which they won't go down because prices don't go down. But once again, you know, like back in the day, you know, college was so special because there wasn't that many, and not many people got to go. And there wasn't a library on every corner. you know, so to become educated, it mean it was something really special. But now everybody, there's bad information out there as well as good information. And there's some people that would even argue with you, there's bad information in colleges being taught. So, you know, I think it's something that a challenge for Asian Americans, especially, that they do have that pressure, that added pressure that they have to come here and be doctors, or they have to. There's a big thing in Filipino culture. For some reason, it's nurses. I don't know why, but it is. My wife's not a nurse, but I mean, I'm just saying, it seems like every Filipino comes here has to be a nurse. But and I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, wanting to strive and be better. That's great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But I think it's starting to become a misconception now of how to live and make it in America.
Yeah, no, it's a good point to emphasize, because Ronnie Chang in his comedy special made a great observation that the quickest way for Asians to establish money and prestige is to go into medicine or engineering or all these other profitable, respectable skill sets, right? And then, you know, they're so hung up on this, though, that it just becomes very short-sighted. So they raise their kids to be like, hey, go be a doctor, you know, go da-da-da. And so, you know, these kids work hard, get into med school or, you know, get the engineering degree. And then they realize you can't put life on cruise control. You've just inherited another set of problems, right? And if you are clear that these problems are meaningful ones that you want to solve, you know, and treat patients and things like that, great. But if you only did it just because you wanted to make mom and dad happy, you know, that's pretty dangerous, right? And with the information overload that we have, you know, Thomas Friedman talks about, this world is flat, right? Anyone with a computer and an internet connection can start anything they want. And, you know, you see the fallout of that, whether it's Seth Godin talking about in Tribes, right? All these Al-Qaeda supporters can find each other online now, right? And then you have, you know, books like Factory Man by Beth Macy talking about, you know, how the furniture companies in America basically were willing to outsource to China and, you know, forfeit jobs here in the US for people who didn't know how to adapt their skills, right? And why do I need to go to college? I can just, you know, learn all the Google training modules to get a job at Google. And that's the direct line. You don't need to submit a conventional resume anymore. You're just like, no, I took all your training courses. And Google's like, huh, they've already taken initiative to take all our training courses. Okay, maybe we hire this person, right? We don't need to worry about whether they have a college degree or anything else like that. They already took the time to learn the job skills that we know we need and that they know we need. Yeah, you don't have to do a conventional path anymore. You know, money is no longer a barrier.
That is so true. You know, and, you know, to talk about like the Asian stereotypes, I feel bad about this sometimes because most people, when they see that the average, you know, Asian American, and these are good stereotypes, but at the same time, I can only imagine there's backlash. He's smart. This guy's smart. So if he's talking anything, you know, math wise or thing, I'm going to listen, you know, but that puts a lot of pressure on Asian people. Especially if you're a dumbass Asian, you're like, what, you know? So, I mean, you know, those kind of stereotypes, a lot of people like, you know, well, Asians got good stereotypes. Who doesn't want to be thought of as the smart people and this and that and that? You know, but at the same time, I mean, it puts another level of frustration, you know, and I think
no one likes being sandbagged. Yeah, no one likes being sandbagged. They're just like, why did you get the top? Why did you ace this test, Jerry? Just kind of like, geez, sorry, I didn't realize my standard was so much higher than yours. You know,
absolutely, yeah. Man. I mean, you know, it's so stuff like that. I just think it's important to, you know, like I said earlier, try to know, and this is for all races, try to know people outside, because believe it or not, man, being from Tennessee, okay, I've seen people come to Tennessee from the West Coast.
Yeah.
And they assumed that I'm a hillbilly banging my cousin, you know, and they really believed this. They really had, they don't even know me, you know, and I'm like, wow, that's ignorance. Yeah. So know people outside of your tribe, man. Know people different from you, you know. And yeah, I think that's important. And what you're doing, man, I think is fantastic for Asian Americans, brother, because there are a lot of people out there that they don't want to show weakness. They don't want to show, you know, how do I confront this problem? And what you're doing is great, Jerry. It really is.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
But I tell you what, this is what we're going to do now on the Abracadam podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Fu. Also, you got the coolest last name. All right.
Thank you. Yeah,
initials, if you don't like it, are clearly F you. Okay. There we go.
There we go.
He's never heard that before, folks. I promise. Yeah. I tell you what, Jerry, we're going to do some mind reading, brother. All right.
All right.
Do you believe in mind reading?
Oh, I believe it's possible.
It is possible. There we go. Okay, Jerry. This is what we're going to do here. Hold on.
Okay.
All right. What I'm going to do, I'm going to show you some cards right here.
Okay.
I want you to think of one of those cards. Don't name it. Just think it. Get one of those cards inside your head, brother. You got it.
Got it. All right.
All right. And right now, that card is living inside your head, Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to lose the cards in the deck.
Okay.
Give them a little shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know, man, but I'm going to give it a shot.
All right.
Jerry, I'm going to cut the deck right here. Okay. I'm obligated, brother. I cannot get out of this, no matter how bad I try.
All right.
For the first time, Jerry,
mm-hmm.
what was a card you were just thinking of?
You want me to say it out loud?
Say it out loud.
Eight of Diamonds.
The Eight of Diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jerry Fu, just for you, man, here on the Abracadam podcast, I cut to one card and one card only.
Yep. Whoa! Amazing.
The Eight of Diamonds.
That's pretty sweet.
You have been abracadammed, my man. Yes, you have.
Yes.
And also, I want to give a big shout out to Asians in Magic right now are freaking killing it. Killing. I don't know if you know this, but everybody knows Shim Lin. Yeah, absolutely nice. Killing it. He is the man. Another more shout out for Asian love. I love Asians. Damn it. What can I say? Awesome. I tell you what, Jerry, now. Oh, let's do this. Let's do a hypothetical, man.
Okay, let's do
it. All right. Here we go, dude. First of all, do you believe in time travel? This is something I think of a lot. Really, I do. Do you believe in time travel?
I don't. It's a great concept in movies, and they take all sorts of liberties to make time travel work. But I have not. I don't believe it.
You don't think? You don't think it'll ever be possible? Or
I mean, I'm not here to rule out possibilities. That's what, you know, saved my career, was when I finally believed in the possibility of becoming an effective leader. So I believe in possibilities. I just don't see it in my lifetime. That's all.
Gotcha. Now, one thing I will say this real quick, and I don't want to go down this path because I can geek out on this forever. Sure. But I see this actually happen. Back to the Black Mirror. I don't know if you're a fan of the Black Mirror show, but there was an episode where basically they recorded everything that you see is being recorded, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I see this one day. Imagine this. Now, this isn't actually time traveling, but imagine from the time maybe you were 5 years old.
Okay.
That it is recorded every experience you have, but based off your eyesight, everything you're experiencing. Okay. Your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Now your entire experience of life has all been recorded on video.
Okay.
And then say the time you're 74, 75 years old, and you're like, you know what? I want to go back and relive that moment when I was 10 years old. You put on the VR headset and you're there. Okay.
Wow.
That would be kind of cool. I mean,
would be neat.
You can't interact with your yourself, but you can still see it. Anyways. Yeah. I see something like that happen in the future. So remember this, people. I predicted it right here on the Abracadam podcast, right here with Jerry Fu, baby, the first time. Yeah. There we go. I want my money. All right.
Absolutely.
So let's say time travel is real. Let's just say, and let's say Jerry Fu can travel in time, but you get one trip, okay? Which means you don't get to come back.
Oh, wow.
Would you travel to the past? Or would you travel to the future?
Great question. I'd probably travel to the past just so I could redo everything that and spare myself some of the challenges that I've dealt with now, I suppose.
Okay, so now he's telling us he's got regrets, folks. Jerry's got regrets.
Oh, yeah. Wow, trick question. That's the best magic trick you've done, Danny.
Mr. Asian is showing his feelings. We got you, Jerry. We got
good job.
You. All right, brother. That's definitely a fair answer, man. It really is. Mm. And dude, I have enjoyed this conversation. I've learned some stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I totally support what you're doing. Asian Americans definitely need something like that right now. Mm-hmm. And so where can people learn more about Jerry Fu?
Yeah. You can connect with me on LinkedIn if you want. But all the goodies, like I said, happen at the website, www.adaptingleaders.com. You can get the download free for the framework on hard conversations. You can schedule a complimentary 30-minute call, or just check out the free blog where I summarize useful and interesting leadership books and offer other life hacks. So adaptingleaders.com.
Awesome. Jerry, once again, man, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast, dude. It has been a blast.
Of course.
All right, Abracadamits. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope you learned something. Hey, Jerry is a very interesting guy. Very fun conversation. Be sure, and like I said, if you're Asian, definitely you want to check out his website, and feel free to reach out with him for any coaching that you may need. If you guys have not done so, be sure to like and subscribe to the Abracadam Podcast. Follow us on Facebook, the Abracadam Podcast on Facebook. Hey, give me a follow. You know, if you're on Instagram, give me a follow at Super Magic Boy on Instagram. I post where my shows are upcoming and things that's going on. I would really appreciate it too. That's if you're interested. Anyways, if not, who cares? Besides that, like I said, I'm tired, so I'm going to hop off here and take a nap. So, like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Yes, awesome!
Will you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?